Transmission start. Welcome to Where Did the Road Go? Join us as we wander off the path and explore lost history, consciousness, the paranormal, unexplained mysteries, alternative thought, and much more. We are present on the web at wheredidtheroadgo.com. Now here is your host, Soraya.
And welcome to this week's Midweek Podcast. Once again, finally joined again by Red Pill Junkie.
Yay!
And Joshua Cutchin.
I'm glad to be here, and I'm glad to have let RPJ off his temporary probation.
Okay. Good, because we like him.
Yeah, it's nice out of the box. Look, this guy. Oh, my God, I forgot how it looks like.
And really, it's been a while since either of you have been on, but particularly you, Miguel.
Mm-hmm.
It's been at least 2 or 3 weeks now, Josh, right?
Yeah, it's been a while. I've been busy trying to get my life in order because I'm now a homeowner, so it's been sort of a time vampire, as it were.
Well, welcome to hell.
Exactly.
And Miguel, you've just been completely unavailable.
I don't know. I've been, incommunicado. I've not been abducted by aliens. I've not been, imprisoned in Guantanamo. I've just been, incredibly busy.
I do believe you were available a couple of weeks when Josh wasn't.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
That's the way with, 3-4 people with different agendas, it's sometimes it's very difficult to synchronize all timelines.
You're telling me you're trying to put together bands and trying to negotiate 7 schedules is the most maddening, depressing thing I've ever done.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I was hoping we were also going to be joined tonight by Steve Stockton, who just told me he hasn't even left work yet. It has been the day from hell.
Oh.
So Steve will not be joining us, unfortunately. And Mike is out on vacation, but didn't want to talk about this anyway. And what we're going to talk about tonight, at least to start, is Stranger Things.
Mm-hmm.
Which you both have finished, right?
Yeah. Unlocked.
Yes. Yeah. As someone who tries to consider himself relatively up to speed on what's coming down the pike, as a pretty active cinephile, I was sort of broadsided back, I suppose, in late spring about the fact that this was coming out because I hadn't heard anything about it. And it was, it was a wonderful, wonderful, nice surprise.
Yeah, and I thought it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, me too.
I know there are some people who didn't like it, but that's always going to be the case. Mm-hmm. And it definitely took – here's the thing I liked about it. Although it definitely gave a nod to the 80s, it wasn't something that made the 80s seem cooler than it was. It was something that just seemed like it would have come out in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
There were pop culture references every 3 seconds throughout the entire TV show.
Yeah, it had a certain level of authenticity that I don't think you've gotten on a lot of 80s nostalgia bait. I mean, I don't think so. If we want to sort of use an extended metaphor here, the sort of Amblin films of the 80s were Coca-Cola. And since then, people have been trying to ape that, and all we've been getting has been Sam's Choice. And while this isn't Coca-Cola, it's at least Diet Coke. At least has the same, the same sort of sensation. It's pretty darn close to what you're looking for. And I think it does the nostalgia thing better than anything that's come before. I know in sort of our pre-chat talk, we'd talked about a little bit about Super 8, but I think this does the 80s nostalgia thing in a much more natural way than Super 8 did, personally.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't feel they were aiming for 80s nostalgia, for the, Gen Xers among us. I mean, I was born in 73, so obviously I lived through the 80s. But I think the reason they decided to set the story in that particular decade is mainly because of Steven Spielberg. I mean, this is obviously something that is deeply, deeply inspired in Steven Spielberg's early filmography. I mean, E.T. and all the other movies, I don't know, well, Cocoon and all of that. I mean, this, in a way, felt like what a, I don't know, 7-10 chapter Steven Spielberg movie would have been, you know, if he had decided to go for a series instead of this devoting himself to film. So I feel that is the reason why they went for the 80s vibe, you know, instead of, I don't know, setting it in the 1990s or the early 2000s. I don't know.
Well, you know, I agree with that a lot. I mean, some of the stuff sort of, I have to sympathize, because one of the biggest criticisms of the series has been that it's sort of been sort of in this 80s pastiche thing. But, and I have to sympathize with that a little bit to a certain degree. I mean, there's some things that you just wouldn't have seen in the 80s that we think back on the 80s as. Like, I think there's a poster for John Carpenter's The Thing, which was a flop at the time. Nobody liked that movie. Mm-hmm. But at the same time...
Really?
Oh yeah, no. It was regarded as a critical and financial flop at the time. It was only within the past probably 20 years that it's really been regarded as being the classic that it is.
Huh. I did not know that.
But I think that it was important to set it in the '80s because that was sort of the last hurrah of the latchkey child. You know, that was the sort of the last time in modern American culture, at least, that children could, you know, go off and have adventures on their own without parents really fretting and worrying about it. And I think that really fits into the overall sort of aesthetic of the film, which, again, like you couldn't set this film in modern day because you wouldn't have that aspect to it. And that's a huge aspect of these kids who just go off and, you know, do their own thing. One of my favorite characters is the dad, who seems blissfully unaware of everything at all times. Love that character.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. Mm-hmm.
And you know, taking some of the technology out of it makes it a little more interesting, too, where you don't have cell phones and things like that to access.
Well, yeah, because how many times have you been seeing a horror film and, you know, they have to come up with some sort of a convoluted way of saying, oh, their cell phones are out, or, you know, oh, you can't Google this, you know? Yeah, exactly.
The only repository of knowledge had to be the science teacher from the school, you know, the one you had to go to in order to ask about, you know, this idea of, you know, parallel dimensions or other universes and all of that, instead of, you know, just, you know, striking a few keys in your computer and, oh, well, there you go.
Yeah, it was definitely the age of the gatekeeper, and I really do like the way that that's sort of reflected in the film. Another thing that I really loved, and I wish I'd come up with this analogy myself, but I actually stole it from a film podcast, is that it feels like the three groups of protagonists, the children, the teens, and the adults, are in all three different sort of 80s horror films. So you've got the children who are in sort of like this Amblin film. Mm-hmm. You've got the teens who are almost in this John Carpenter film. And then you have the adults who are really, it's like knee-deep in the Stephen King thing. And I think the way that the filmmakers, the Duffer brothers, who literally, like, you know, were brought forth from the forehead of Zeus. I don't think anybody had really heard of these guys until this. that the Duffer brothers were able to balance those three tonally, I think, is not getting as much love as it should, because that's kind of a feat to make, you know, the kid's story as high as the stakes are to feel as innocent as it does, all the way up to the higher stakes thing with the parents. I mean, that's a tonal juggling act that I think really deserves some real love.
Yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I got a list here of some of the movies that they kind of referenced throughout. And I think most of these are pretty obvious. The Goonies, because you have the group of kids, you know, going out and exploring. Alien, if nothing else, you see the egg in the other world. Mm-hmm. That looks like the egg from Alien. I think it was intentionally supposed to be the egg from Alien, essentially.
And also, to make sure that everybody's listening, we're going to be getting all into spoiler territory here.
yes.
But also, to that Alien idea, the idea, you know, at the end, that sort of ambiguous note of something being implanted in someone's body that comes out of them, you know, that sort of thing.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. E.T. is a very obvious one.
Sure.
I really, you know, I was really worried when the military or whatever they were, military chasing the kids on the bikes, that she was going to make the bikes fly. And I thought, don't do that. Don't do that. Okay, good. She crushed the cars. That's better.
Yeah, that's a bridge too far. I think my favorite quote about this show so far was after after my Rune Soup interview, Gordon White said that it was, yeah, it's a lot like E.T. If E.T. was written by Whitley Strieber, which I think is the best summation of Stranger Things I've heard.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Another reference, of course, is Carrie, you know, by Stephen King.
Yep.
I didn't get the Carrie reference so much.
Mm-hmm.
In retrospect, I mean, this idea of this girl being ostracized with powers, I think, is sort of what you're getting at, right? I mean,
okay. I guess I can see that.
And this idea, you know, you mentioned Whitley Strieber, and I was thinking about him all the time that I was seeing all the scenes with Eleven, because one of the main themes in the story is the idea that the MK Ultra experiments carried out by the CIA, you know, involve children, something that obviously we really don't know about, because most of the incriminating material was destroyed by the CIA directives. But at the same time, we have the claims of Whitley Strieber, who says that he was involved in some kind of like MK Ultra like experiment in which he was, you know, abused, exploited, you know, almost like physically assaulted, in order for him to like almost break down the barriers between this reality and another one.
Yeah, and I think that's another reason that needed to be set in the 50s too, is because if you were to set it today, you'd be, I think, in order to have people who are involved with something like MKUltra, you'd be too far removed from that nowadays. But in the 80s, you were still, you know, temporally close enough to make it make sense.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Agreed. It just seems like that's where it should have been set, I mean, to make sense. Firestarter, there are some obvious connections to. The girl being part of a military experiment and running away. Poltergeist, with, you know, connecting to the other world and being able to talk to, you know, that other side.
Yeah, good point.
Close Encounters of the Third Kind, various references there to that movie. Nightmare on Elm Street was suggested, and that's an odd one, but I guess there is some Nightmare on Elm Street.
Well, the coming through the wall thing, I think, is probably part of what they're getting at, right?
Good one.
Explorers, which I vaguely remember.
I don't think I've ever seen it, guys.
I'm pretty sure I've seen it.
Shame on you.
I know.
But it's been a while. Because that was when they found the alien spaceship, right?
No. The aliens were communicating with the kids through their dreams.
Oh. And they were, I don't remember this.
Instructions. Yeah, with Ethan Hawke.
Sorry, I was going to make an awful joke, but I'm just going to back off now. It's fine.
No.
I don't think I've ever seen it.
Huh. I'm not sure I have either. Now I'm going to have to look it up. The Shining. I don't really necessarily see the connection with The Shining.
I'm trying to think of what the connection with... I mean, maybe just like having a child who's attached to the other world. Is that what they're giving you?
Yeah.
Stand By Me is pretty obvious. It's a group of kids going out and, you know,
coming
of age type of thing.
Well, and in fact, one of the episodes is entitled The Body, which was the original working, which was the actual title of the story, the short story that Stand By Me was based on. So, yeah, it's a pretty
exactly. And then the last one that was listed was Commando, which I really don't know, unless that has a connection to the aliens. I don't know. Commando wasn't sci-fi, was it?
Commando is a Schwarzenegger Rambo ripoff, and I love it.
Yeah.
Death, but it was, yeah, I don't.
I don't know how that's referenced in there.
Yeah, me neither.
Huh. All right.
I mean, I think you could just as easily or better make the case for Predator being an influence than Rambo.
Well, yeah, definitely.
Oh, you know, thinking about The Shining, well, maybe showing the kid, you know, 11 with that that awkward girlish pink dress, you know, maybe the reference with the twin sisters in the hallway, you know, maybe that's what they're getting at. Maybe.
Okay, so this is actually linked with a video. And in the video, they side-by-side show you clips from the original movie and then clips from Stranger Things showing you the similarity between the, like, the references.
Mm-hmm.
If it's just in terms of, like, visual composition of shots and stuff, I mean, that might well be the case.
Well, for instance, right now they're showing Elliot finding E.T. in the cornfield and the kids finding Eleven in the weeds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then now they have E.T. watching, Tom and Jerry, I think it was, and you have Eleven watching whatever TV show she was watching when she turned it on, the He-Man, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
So little things like that, you know, little subtle references.
I mean, I guess you could sub Eleven for E.T. and it would be actually a lot more similar to the film E.T. But at the same time, I did appreciate this series' unflinching dedication to be like, no, it she can be this nasty. Like, especially the scene where the climax in the high school, or the entire scenes where she like just straight up murders people, and it's
right.
Not saying it's not justified, but like it's it doesn't really flinch from that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And A Nightmare on Elm Street was definitely the thing coming through the wall. The poltergeist mm-hmm. reference they give is using the rope to connect into the other world.
No, yeah, not only that. Yeah. But also the idea that you can communicate with other, I don't know, levels of existence, if you want to address it like that, through electromagnetic means, you know. I mean, there's the mother, Winona Ryder, trying to communicate through the sun wheel, through this like almost like a Ouija board kind of like device of made out of Christmas lights, and there's also trying to use the school's ham radio, you know, that's been like hacked or charged by Eleven's powers in order to traverse to the upside down dimension. And that was an interesting concept for me, you know, this idea that these phenomena are somehow linked through electromagnetism, you know, I mean, as Kiel would have been proud of that.
Yeah, and to sort of riff on the poltergeist reference, I mean, the idea that you can be geographically in the same area and still hear people, because there's that thing in Poltergeist where like the kid is in the house, but just in a different, you know, different layer of the house dimensionally.
Yeah.
And
that
sort of thing really does repeat itself in this too. I thought, that's probably the Poltergeist reference that people are talking about.
And mm-hmm. and the Shining reference they were referring to is him smashing the door with the axe the same way she took down the wall in the house.
Him meaning which character?
Johnny.
Nicholson. Jack Nicholson.
Yeah, Nicholson.
No, I'm sorry. The character in... Oh, she was smashing down... Okay, got it. He was smashing it down in Stranger Things. Yeah, kind of.
And the commando reference is when they're arming themselves to go out and fight. It's apparently shot very much the same way the arming up in Commando is shot.
Okay, so I would argue that's like a if it's like a moment, that's like a one moment, one shot homage versus like an influence on the entire scene.
Right. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that makes more sense.
It was a reference, basically. And, of course, there's a lot of paranormal stuff that's referenced in there, too. And the one that stuck out to me, and we mentioned this briefly, was the missing 411 stuff, the way the kids just disappear and they can't be tracked and they're just gone.
Yeah.
And they're picked off when they're alone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, since Mike's not here, I'm gonna be the person that the person that poo poos a little bit and says that I don't necessarily think that I didn't pick up on that missing 411 connection. Maybe if I saw it again, I would a little bit more. But I can understand where you'd pick up on that. I mean, definitely. The idea of people just completely vanishing, I think, is there's some parallels there.
I'm very near to their homes, you know, in the case of the kid in the story.
Yeah. There's also some, and I don't hear this one mentioned too much, but it definitely had the feel at times, especially in the other world of Silent Hill.
Yeah.
I can see that. I can definitely see that.
And, of course, there's a heavy Lovecraft influence, which also seems to just kind of get forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it's sort of Lovecraft, like, in terms of, like, I've seen some people mentioning that the monster is Lovecraft, and to me, the monster smells a lot more like Guillermo del Toro than it does than it does Lovecraft when it's finally revealed.
He's been inspired by Lovecraft, so
right. But I don't think I think that the whole thing, and I, of course, this is the problem. This is the reason why there aren't a lot of great Lovecraft adaptations. The entity itself is a little bit too mundane. Not saying they didn't love it, but the design of the creature is a little bit too mundane, I think, for what Lovecraft would have put into this. You know, I think it would have been unknowable, but you couldn't have filmed that, so.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
You know what? One on 80s reference that I picked up from the series was the 2013 movie with Scarlett Johansson, Under the Skin.
Yes, absolutely. My wife was like, it's the movie where she goes around having sex with all the guys. I'm like, yeah, that, yep, Under the Skin. The other world that Eleven goes into is this like black shiny pool of water. It's almost identical to the place where Scarlett does her thing in Under the Skin.
Yeah. Creepy as hell, you know, because it is completely devoid of anything, you know. It's
yeah, but it also calls to mind, you know, scrying and stuff, you know, the use of a black mirror. I mean, I think there's some sort of a little bit of a culty tinge there. Yeah. And I think that I feel like we're all over the place. I'm sorry. I'll try to rein in a little bit my enthusiasm.
It's all right.
But returning to the idea of the entity, the Demogorgon, as it was called, I also got a little bit of a hint of Slenderman-ish sort of things regarding him. Facelessness.
Definitely.
I agree completely.
Has anyone seen interviews with the guys who made this talking about their influences?
No.
I've read a few, but I have not seen any videos or anything.
What do they say what their influences are?
From what I've read, for the most part, it's exactly what you'd think it is. I mean, it's King and it's Spielberg and all those and Carpenter and all those folks. I do think it's interesting that, I believe this is the internet, so if I misspeak, everybody's going to jump in and correct me. But I believe, off the cuff, that they were not really children of the 80s. They were sort of like me. They were born in the mid 80s and they really, you know, came to this sort of age that the kids are at in the 90s. But I think that they were really sort of trying to tap into that Amblin thing as well. Which, you know, feels super obvious, but beyond that, no, I have read some interviews with them saying that they want to continue the series, continue this actual story in the series, which I think is maybe a mistake. I would rather see something set in the same universe as Stranger Things.
I don't know. They left it off for some interesting stuff to go forwards with.
Yeah, but I'm kind of done. I'm kind of done. I'm kind of done with this. I'm kind of done with this cast of characters. Yeah, because I feel like, again, a phrase I'm going to steal from another podcast I listened to regarding this. I feel like the chemistry with these kids is, at this age, is sort of lightning in a bottle. And if you come in filming it, maybe filming it positively, you know, optimistically 8 months from now, they're going to be so much older and everything about their lives is going to have changed so much that I don't think you can necessarily recreate that. I'm afraid that it might suffer from, you know, Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull syndrome, where it's, hey, everybody's back, but it doesn't quite feel the same.
I don't know about that.
I will set forward the story, you know, 10 years in the future, you know, set it in 1993. So the kids are, I don't know, they won't be in high school, you know, they will be probably in college by then. And maybe 11 wouldn't have aged, you know, because she is in the upside down universe. Maybe that could be an interesting spin, you know, and this kid. Mm-hmm.
I was just gonna say. See, my fan fiction was to approach it and like tell everybody in the media that it's completely separate. Have it be like focus on like cattle mutilation and that really '90s the '90s UFO stuff.
Yeah.
And have it all centered around this girl who's coming to town, and as it's revealed later that the girl who's now 18 that no one recognizes, halfway through the series where you realize that this is 11. Because one thing that I feel like the series did well is that it really did address the underlying interconnected nature of paranormal activity in general. I mean, I feel like there was a time when studio execs would be like, you can have a monster, you can have telepathy, or you can have this or that or ghost or whatever. You can't have all three, kid. But I feel like this pulled that off really well in a compelling way, and I feel like it's sort of getting. I feel like this is one of the first pop culture things that has been adopted so rapidly that has really addressed that sort of pan paranormal thing that a lot of us see who are involved in the subject.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I love how they decided, to mix it up together, and say, everything comes from a single source.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's very much, guess what? It's very much consciousness based, but it's consciousness based in the fact that like she reached out to something, and that in a consciousness realm, in an extended altered state, and that thing still had real life repercussions in the physical world. And I think that's really cool to see as many people like really interested in that, because I feel like it's going to be shorthand for a lot of the stuff that we talk about. Like, you remember Stranger Things? That's sort of where our headspace is at.
Exactly. I mean, the upside down world, it's a parallel universe, but at the same time is almost like a fall or a shadow construct of human imagination. I mean, you have Will, who is hiding in like recreation of his forest fortress that he had in the real world, So how did he manage to find that? So it's probably one of the things that they decided to leave it in a very ambiguous light, but it really made me think, okay, so this is a very kind of like Inception-like idea. That realm is a realm ruled by imagination, and this Demogorg is like the boogeyman. It's something that is—it's shown feeding off a deer, it's shown feeding off is like a living predator. But at the same time, I felt like he was also feeding off fear, very much in the vein of what authors like our friend Nick Redfern had been writing about, maybe. One of the reasons why the entities in this phenomenon decide to show themselves in such a menacing fashion.
Yeah.
Mm, good point. I think we had talked earlier in our pre-show talk about the connection to water and the body, which I think is something we didn't talk about when we were mentioning the missing 411 yes. connections earlier, but right. This idea of a fake body and this connection to water, I think does strengthen the idea that maybe there's some sort of missing 411 connection. I would like to sort of ask, or I would like to be, I'll be really curious to see what the Duffer brothers, had been familiar with in terms of actual, occult, for lack of a better term, literature. I do know not only obviously they were familiar with MK Ultra, but the working title of the film of the series was Montauk, actually.
Which
I remember a lot.
Interesting. Yeah, so they obviously at least have some of the conspiracy stuff down.
Sure.
Yeah. And I feel like if they're involved enough to be aware of Montauk and MKUltra, they probably have heard of Missing 411.
Maybe.
Nowadays in the esoteric / occult, I would think that's probably a given.
I mean, I think it's a given that the writers who are in charge or assigned to come up with storylines for this kind of. Serious, they do have a more than amateur level of knowledge of the kind of things that we like to discuss about. I mean, think of the people who were in charge of writing plots for The X-Files. You know, obviously they had at their disposal many of the literature books, you know, that we many people don't know of, obviously, but they obviously use that as a valuable resource, you know, to come up with cool stories for the series. I think this is, we obviously would like to know where. Yeah, I mean, did they read the Daily Grail? Do they listen to Where Did the Road Go? It doesn't really matter, but I'm sure that these guys, you know, have visited our realm more than once.
Yeah, I think it's a safe bet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even if it's just for surface inspiration.
Sure, and it was really well used, I think, because they come up with something that I really feel, you know, yeah, it's a pastiche and it has a lot of cultural reference, but it was something that I felt it was very, very original, very fresh, very inspirational in itself. You know, right now I'm looking at a whole lot of original artwork that has been uploaded. I don't know, you can find it in Pinterest. All these artists that have been inspired by the series, you know, everybody, you know, doing their own version of 11, of all the kids' characters. It's something that I even felt myself, you know, I wanted to draw something inspired by the series. That tells you something about the pull or the force that the series had, and I think it's going to age well, you know.
Go ahead.
Go on.
I was just going to say, I would argue that the pop culture imprint of this is something that you probably haven't seen. I mean, it's on a Game of Thrones level, and when you think about the fact that it came out of nowhere and it's on this Netflix model, mm-hmm. starring really nobody. I mean, I love Winona Ryder, you know, to the ends of the world, to the ends of the earth, but really, there's no real star power behind it. I think that's a major coup, and I haven't seen something really impact pop culture like this since, you know, Game of Thrones came on and was doing its thing.
Mm-hmm.
And here's a question: do you think this would have been made if it wasn't on Netflix?
Probably not.
I mean, so the Netflix model usually centers around like 13 to 14 episodes, which in the case of like the Marvel Netflix series is way too long. There are like 3 or 4 episodes in the middle of each of those series that you could just cut out.
I thought 10 was the average.
I think that, I don't know. I know that the Marvel ones are like 13 to 14, which are a little bit long. This is one of the shorter ones. This was 8 to 10, I think.
Yeah, this was 10, I believe.
This was 10 or okay.
I think.
But given that, like, if you think about like typical network TV, no way, because I don't think that this story could have stretched over 24 episodes, which was the standard order that you'd get. Maybe on some sort of premium network, this could have flown. I don't know. I do think that it is astounding that Netflix has been able to put in the requisite support for a series like this. I mean, it looks great. You know, I've slipped up a couple times almost calling it a film or a movie because it really does have that sort of feel. It's shot that way, the production values that way. And that's sort of astounding in and of its own right. But, you know, I don't think on traditional network TV, no. Maybe on some sort of premium network, and on even that, like the ultra premium stuff. So, like maybe HBO, Stars, Showtime, maybe Cinemax, Skinemax. Maybe they could have pulled this off. Maybe. But I think that this really does speak to the strength of the Netflix model as it is to be able to come in and deliver something on its own terms, on its own schedule, on its own, you know, series order length.
And I was wrong. It's 8 episodes.
Okay, yeah. So it's pretty short. I mean, you wouldn't find. I mean, even I think Game of Thrones is still 10 episodes at least.
But that's that is becoming more and more common, especially with genre shows running only 10 to 13 episodes for the year.
I think it's a, sorry, go ahead. Sorry.
Sci-Fi Channel's been doing it with more and more things. A bunch of the shows I watch only run 10 to 12, and I wish it was 10 to 12 at the beginning of the year, 10 to 12 near the end of the year, like the Walking Dead does. I think that's a better model, giving you kind of like splits rather than having to wait a full year before you get to see season two.
Yeah, to me, I love the BBC model, which is generally speaking, from what I can tell, at least I haven't really done the homework in terms of looking into their internal mechanisms. But in terms of BBC shows, they tend to come in with like an idea of like, this is going to be a 3-season show. This is how many episodes we need. This is what it's going to be. Of course, Sherlock is an anomaly because they just want to keep on riding that gravy train as long as they can. But I think of shows like Life on Mars, where they just sort of got in, told the story that they wanted to, and got out. And it really does trim a lot of the fat. Penny Dreadful on Showtime is another show that I really feel like was told within the parameters that it wanted to tell. Like, it was a decision to cancel after 3 years. And that was what we're going to do, and we're going to be out. Which is admirable because, you know, it's storytelling 101. Like, cut as much stuff out as you can. Like, we want this to be streamlined.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the problem is a lot of these shows never know if they're going to get another season.
Yeah, true.
You know, and right. I think that if these TV stations would devote a little more, you know, I mean, none of these the shows they cancel generally aren't doing so bad that they need to cancel them.
Yeah.
You know, it's just kind of like, well, you're not doing as good as we thought. We're going to cancel you. Or, you know, people are DVRing you rather than watching you live, so you're gone, you know. And it's like, come on. If you don't let it build up,
yeah.
If you don't let it get to a point, people don't want to invest their time on watching, you know, the beginning of something and then never getting the rest of it.
Well, network TV's been really bad about that. There's been a real disconnect in terms of, like, avid viewership and what they deliver. I mean, any series of channels that cancels Arrested Development and Firefly before their arc is finished is that system is flawed fundamentally. Yeah. And the encouraging thing is that I see a lot of I say premium networks, meaning like not only HBO and all those others that I mentioned earlier, but also like TNT and FX. They are able to be like, look, we're going to give you this. What do you want to do creatively? And they really follow that to the end of the line. And I really have to admire that.
Sure. If Chris Carter had come up with the X-Files 10 years later than he had, we would only have had one season. Because
yeah, yeah. Very possibly.
Sure. Yeah. The series only became so successful after the second season.
And I am, however, noticing that other stations are taking chances on more genre type of shows. Like, I don't know if either anyone has checked out a show called Brain Dead.
No.
Is it based on the Peter Jackson film at all? Or
no, it is. I don't see what station it's on. It's on like CBS or something like that. It's only 10 episodes so far, but it's about these aliens who start. They're insects, and they start getting into politicians' brains. They eat their brains, and they take them over.
And no one notices the difference.
Oh, no, they do, because they make them more extreme and smarter.
Oh, my God.
But it is one of the most clever shows I've seen in a long time. It's on CBS. Okay. It's one of the most clever shows I've seen in a long time. It has a completely unique concept. It has that sort of alien genre thing going on. And it's quirky and funny and relevant all at the same time. And I'm going, wow, this is never getting a second season.
No. Interesting. You know, it's funny when you come back to watching, we're really far afield of Stranger Things right now, folks. So apologies. Mm-hmm. But whenever you come back to watching network television, you really almost have to rearrange the way that you think about the way that it's structured. I'm a big fan of The Blacklist. That's, I believe, an NBC show. I just end up watching the DVDs when they come out. But like the structure and the tone of network television is so much different than it is on these other premium networks. And but once you plug into it and getting back into that feel, the 24 season model, 24 episode model can be really, you know, positive.
If it's done right, definitely. But I almost think that they need to. What is the Blacklist anyway?
It is basically it's a vehicle to watch James Spader be awesome. James Spader is a criminal kingpin who has decided to work with the government and give them his list of contacts that need to be taken care of. So that's the episodic nature of the show, but there's also this the serial nature, which he's got some stuff in his path that ties into the main protagonist's past as well. But it's mostly it's just an excuse to watch James Spader chew the scenery.
There's one I'm trying to think of what the name of it is with the girl with the tattoos.
Same creators, I think.
Yeah, I think so. That's what I was trying to think of, was the same show or not, but I can't remember the name of the show.
I know what you're talking about. I haven't watched it yet. I think my folks watch it, but I haven't seen it yet.
It's excellent, whatever it's called. but she wakes up in Times Square in a bag, naked, covered in tattoos, and all the tattoos have hidden codes in them for the FBI to figure out.
Oh, yeah. We've all been there, right?
Yeah.
Right, of course.
It's a bit like a homage to Memento in a way, right?
Sort of. It's a lot deeper than Memento.
Okay.
Although there was a great storytelling with Memento.
Yeah. But getting back to Stranger Things.
Oh, go ahead. Yeah.
Sorry.
Let's get back on track. I was going to take us farther afield. So please. Sure.
Where did the road go?
I'm really happy that a series like this managed to gather the amount of success they had, because it may be possible, you know, for this kind of stories, you know, to come to the light. You know, I would love someone to come up with a series involving, I don't know, ancient advanced civilizations, breakaway civilization, you know, all this kind of stuff that we 4Gians love to talk about and muse and,
yeah.
You know, it's great to see, oh my God, you know, there was a series that talked about MK Ultra, you know, and alternative dimensions and all of these, you know, and PK powers, remote viewing, oh my God, you know, remote viewing used by the United States to spy on the Russians, you know, and had me the chance to brag with my coworkers and saying, well, you know, this is actually something that happened, you know, this is something actually based on real life events. So, you know, good on Netflix. Hopefully they can come up with something like this, you know, even if it's not a second season of Stranger Things.
Well, because there's always this moment when you're talking to people, you know, I had this moment a while back talking about the Collins Elite, you know, the subject of Nick Redfern's book Final Events. And there's always this moment where you're talking to people who aren't involved in these subjects where you're like, no, this is fact. And you can see it behind their eyes going, yeah, like established crazy man fact. Like, no, like this is like FOI, like MK Ultra is a fact. The Collins Elite is a fact. Like this is fully disclosed information. And it's nice to have that sort of confirmed in pop culture. Yeah, I totally, totally get that. And it's, you know, it's very, very encouraging to have that, to be able to have this sort of interaction with people.
And that show that I was mentioning with the girl on the tattoos is called Blind Spot.
Okay.
Yeah, I've heard of that. Yeah.
But also good, and also on network TV. So there is some decent stuff being produced today.
Oh yeah, television has become the place where the smartest, the most vibrant, the most interesting writing is to be found. You know, it's like completely opposite of what it was in the 1980s. You know, when the Stranger Things is set. Now, now you see how with Hollywood executives, they have become so painfully conservative, and in the way they choose which ideas to greenlight, and obviously there's so much at stake now. I mean, there used to be a time when a movie was made with, I don't know, $50 million. Now it's closer to $500 million. So they obviously, if they don't see that they're going to have a return of $1 billion in sales all around the world, they don't greenlight that story.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it becomes even more difficult when you factor in, like, you know, marketing costs and stuff like that. One of my favorite comedians, Camille Nanjiani, mentioned that, you know, if it's gotten to the point with television where if a movie is like a solid B, you're like, yeah, I'll go see it. It sounds great. It's a great movie. But if television isn't like an A+, you're like, no, this is awful. It's substandard because there's so much good television right now. It's an embarrassment of riches.
Good point.
Yep.
Did I say thunder again? Sorry, Soraya.
No, I keep blanking on what I wanted to say. But what I wanted to say is that the whole stuff with, like, paranormal theme stuff coming out more and more is also something you wouldn't have seen except for on things like the X-Files years ago. Now it's just kind of weaving its way into our popular culture.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, as much as we want to complain about how downtrodden we as a paranormal community are, it's a good time to be involved in this. This is a lot more open than it has ever been, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
I had a conversation in Starbucks with somebody yesterday while we were waiting to close on our house, and she said, "Oh, what do you do?" And I told her, "You know, musician, author." "Oh, an author? What do? You write books?" "Yeah, I write books." I mean, it's the last thing that you want to admit is what you write books on. when you write books on this stuff. And she was totally into it. And I'm like, man, this is not the way this conversation would have gone even 10 years ago. It's getting a lot more open. It's getting a lot better. I do feel that, like, in the culture.
Mm-hmm.
And I think things like Stranger Things are really sort of, you know, propelling that forward, because people find out that, oh, there's some actual basis behind this high concept.
And as much as I hate to say it, it's also the fault of shows like Ancient Aliens and Ghost Hunters, because they brought those subjects out into the open where people could talk about them and then realize that other people are also interested in this stuff. And whereas those shows may not really be going very far with it or very deep with it, they've opened that doorway.
Well, if you can get somebody to say, like, oh, maybe it was Ancient Aliens, then if you say, actually, you know what, it probably was just us as an advanced civilization, then that's a lot easier pill for them to swallow. You know, it's almost like, yes, you bring them past the point of reason, and then you say, actually, this is probably more likely, and that sort of sort of dials them into what I personally suspect the reality more might be closer to.
Right. And I mean, when you deal with people love ghosts. You know, that's why all the ghost hunting shows do so well. But once you've allowed that to be accepted into general culture, all the stuff connected to it's a little bit easier to kind of stray off to.
Yeah.
The ridicule factor isn't that strong anymore.
Yeah, maybe it's our time, guys. I mean, it used to be that the nerds, you know, the nerd culture became the dominant culture in the late 1990s, and now nowadays, you know, I mean, the biggest blockbusters in Hollywood, you know, are films made for nerds. You know, I mean, you True. Have the Marvel Universe, and now you have Suicide Squad, Batman versus Superman. Maybe it's our time, you know, to be king of the hill, and, you know, Stranger Things is going to make, you know, more serious, catering for our niche.
It would be nice, because you do get this stuff mixed in, but it's usually with a grain of salt. And with Stranger Things, they didn't have that grain of salt there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But obviously, there will be people like Greg Bishop and Michael who will be the snobs who say, "Oh, well, you know, they took all this wrong about the Montauk experiments and all that."
Yeah, but it's still fiction.
Yeah, and I think it's one of those things, and Michael, if you listen to this, love you. Greg, if you listen to this, love you with all my heart. But, like, yeah. I feel like some people let the package hide the pudding in this case. Like, I think that there's some cool things that are done. I don't think that this is one of those pieces of film art that has something bigger to say. I think it's a confection. I think it's a really delicious confection. I think it's, you know, it's an eclair. Like, there's no nutritional value. There's not saying anything bigger about the human condition, but it's really well crafted for what it is. I really do think.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I mean, is there anything about this we haven't covered?
The music, maybe.
Oh, the music is great.
The music's great, yeah.
They claim that they were not channeling John Carpenter. I found that very hard to believe. Not to take away from what they were doing, but...
It was perfect music for the style.
It was great, but it was definitely influenced by... You know, I don't think you can be involved in a production like this and not... pull from some of those people who were doing this, you know, doing the sort of synthesizer soundtracks back then.
Agreed. Anything else you got?
One other thing. One of my biggest complaints, probably the biggest complaint about the series, is that there was not the antagonist was not really compelling. I mean, you've got Matthew Modine as the villain. And he just sort of existed. I felt like that was my take. I feel like he could have been more sinister.
Yeah, but I don't know that he was needed as much as the quest was needed. You know,
I know, but it was just sort of a tease to see Matthew Modine in that role, and then to be like, not so much, nothing to see here. You know, it could have been anybody. Yeah.
So is there anything else you guys are watching that you would recommend to people?
Well, Miguel, do you want to go first?
Well, we've all, I think, seen the trailers for this upcoming movie, Arrival, which looks pretty awesome. I think it's going to be a really cool movie to look at by the end of the year. There's also, I think, been a new release of Steven Spielberg, whom we've discussed extensively in this episode of Where Did the Road Go. He's going to come up with another very interesting movie, Ready Player One. You know, based on a 1980s novel, you know, about virtual reality, and I'm really interested to see Spielberg's take on something that promises to be so prominent in our lives in the not so distant future. So yeah, the things are pretty good, are looking pretty good in the sci-fi horizon.
Yeah, I've been proselytizing about this film Arrival for a while. I hear that it's a very faithful translation of the original short story, which, if anybody wants to look into it, it's by a guy named with last name of Chiang, Chiang. It's called The Story of Your Life. It's technically characterized as a novella. The Hugo Awards have shortened the restrictions on what a novella can be, so it's a really short novella. I'm about a third of the way through, and it is the most fascinating sci-fi story I've read since I, you know, got into P.K. Dick in high school. It's all about language and about the way that language shapes our perceptions, the way about our physiology affects the way that we do the way that we read about language. I think I mentioned to y'all earlier before we started, it's almost like someone mainlined Terrence McKenna lectures and then wrote a science fiction story about language and aliens. It's so far it's amazing. And from what I've heard, from a lot of my favorite cinephile websites, the screenplay for this film is really top notch on in terms of really bringing those ideas to the screen, and it's probably my most anticipated film for the remainder of the year, so I'm just excited to see that too. So thank you for bringing that up, Miguel.
More than Rogue One.
Yeah, actually, you know, I'm, you know me, I love Star Wars so much, but I'm tired of Death Stars. I'm so tired of Death Stars. Let's just name the thing Death Star Wars and have it done with. You know, we got
Death to the Death Star.
Yeah,
I would say the thing I'm looking forward to most is saying I've been waiting for years that finally has happened. That's the new Phantasm movie.
Mm.
I didn't even heard about this.
Yeah, Ravager. Angus Grimm actually got finished filming it just before he died. So Tall Man is there, and this will be it. This is the final Phantasm.
Now, movie. I'm asking this in a non-snarky way. Is this DTV? Direct-to-video, or...?
No, I don't know, actually. I think it's coming out in theaters.
Nice. That's awesome.
I don't care. I just want to see it. I don't
Yeah.
I've always been a huge Phantasm fan. I mean, they're B-movies, but there was always something really... I don't know, unique feeling about them.
Okay.
The world premiere is actually at, it looks like, the Fantastic Fest 2016, September 25th.
Oh, yeah, Fantastic Fest. I'm familiar with that. That's actually, I think it's sponsored by or run by Alamo Drafthouse, which is the sponsor for one of my favorite movie site, birthmoviesdeath.com. Plug, shout out to you guys. I haven't seen any of the Phantasm films, so maybe I should. Like,
really?
Sell me, Sarai.
They are B-movies that make very little sense at times, but are an enormous metaphor.
All the best ones do.
I don't know. They have this atmosphere, and they're like no other horror movies that have been made. They're very 80s, you know? I mean, that's when the first three, I think, came out. There's four out. But it's the concepts are it's horror, but it's also interdimensional horror. Mm. And so it has some of the classic horror trappings while throwing in some other really bizarre stuff.
Nice.
Interesting.
And then I just popped on the trailer to see if it's going straight to video or not. And it definitely looks like the original movies. It definitely looks like a B movie.
Cool.
So, but that was also part of the charm.
Well, if it's playing at Fantastic Fest, it will have some sort of theatrical release, I would assume, if not, you know, just hyper local or hyper, you know, limited. So yeah, that's exciting.
Yeah, it doesn't say. It just said coming soon. So, unfortunately. But it was one of those movies that you know kept being said they're going to make it, and it kept getting not made, and so finally they've made it. They managed to get Angus Grimm plays the tall man. He's the main character. He survived to the end.
Nice. How many Phantasm films are there? This is number what?
Five, I believe.
Nice.
Yes, five. Ravager. But so if you like B horror, yeah, they're right up your alley. But they're also, like I said, they're weirder than the average. You know, they're not slasher fics or anything. They're definitely really, really weird.
Interesting.
And there's nothing to really compare it to. When we were doing our comedy movie, our comedy horror movie, that was kind of the feel I was going for, was the Phantasm thing. I think we kind of went in a different direction, but that was the initial feel. It's like, let's watch Phantasm and then put it together. You know, I want that atmosphere.
Yeah, all I know is that there's a shiny ball that kills people, right?
Oh, yes, yeah. Yes. And there are little dwarves and dead people.
But it's interesting. I feel like if you're listening to cases involving the paranormal, like people reference Phantasm on a semi-regular basis. Like, they saw this orb that looked just like the thing out of Phantasm, or I saw this dwarf that looked like the thing out of Phantasm, you know?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as movies go, that's the one I'm looking forward to, as well as Arrival and, of course, Rogue One.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to Rogue One, too, guys. Come on.
Well, it's, you know, it's not another Death Star. It's the same Death Star.
Okay, yeah.
And you know, it's not like they're, you know, if the next movie also has a Death Star, well, all right.
So here's my thing, and this might sound a bit pedantic, but out of eight, when Rogue One is released, out of eight Star Wars films, all but two will mention at least a Death Star, which is just, blah. It's just, it's sort of. It burns me out a little bit. But you know what? I'm still excited to see it. I'm excited to see stuff that isn't like Skywalker-centric in Star Wars.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There was a great quote I read that said something like, if they ever make prequels to the original three Star Wars movies and they suck, I hope I don't remember them.
Well, I think most people have succeeded on that front.
with the new one, it kind of just push those further off into oblivion.
Yeah, for sure.
So other stuff I think is pretty cool at the moment. And eventually I'm planning on doing this movie podcast. It's probably going to be short little bursts with various different people just reviewing different movies, mostly indie movies. And whenever I can come up with a good name and get that started, that'll start coming out too. It won't be Where Did the Road Go, but it'll be some of us and some other people involved. And you'll be able to find it through Where Did the Road Go site, probably. I know, Miguel, you were interested in being a part of that.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, I've always loved movies as a medium, as a, you know, as a way in which our modern myths are now being disseminated. Yes, yeah, I would love to participate.
And Joshua, were you in on that too?
I didn't want to like ask for it, but I would love to be a part of it too.
All right,
yeah. I might be the neighborhood cynic, but I would love to be a part of it too.
Other stuff I think is really exceptional right now: the redone version of 12 Monkeys on Sci-Fi.
Yeah,
which is go on.
No, I've heard I have heard that that is a better idea than it sounds like.
It's very possibly better than the movie.
Wow.
Yeah, I've heard people saying that, so I need to check it out.
Because when it first came on, I'm thinking, really, 12 Monkeys? And then I started watching it, and I went, wow, this is really good. And now by the second season, I'm just like, it's blowing your mind with the stuff they're doing. And you're like, this is crazy.
You know what I would throw in there, too, in terms of things that are series that are based on films that have a 14 aspect that are better than they ever should have any right to be is Fargo.
Yes, Fargo's fantastic.
Because what I love about Fargo is both seasons so far have featured some 14 elements. The first season had a fall of fish from the sky. The second season was much more overtly 14. It was centered around some 1970s UFO waves, and there are moments when characters have missing time and stuff. But it's presented in a way that doesn't influence the plot directly. Like, you could probably take a lot of that out and it wouldn't matter. And what I love about it is that it depicts 14 phenomena as something that's like weather. Like, you know,
it just happens.
It's just people have these experiences and it doesn't necessarily have any sort of deeper meaning. I mean, yes, there's sort of a moment where it means something to the plot a little bit. But like in terms of like these things that happen, they just happen to characters and they just sort of shrug and move along. It's not like, you know, it's central to the plot that a character sees. In this case, in season two, it sees a UFO. I've loved the way that the series has not only taken that ball and run with it, but also has taken the ball and run with it in a very Coen Brothers esque tradition. You know, there's a scene in one of the Coen Brothers films where a character talks about seeing a UFO as well. Coen Brothers, The Man Who Wasn't There, that's what it's called, where a character talks about a UFO experience as well. So again, this idea that like 14 phenomena is just part of everyday life. You know, it's just Hollywood that makes it seem like it's a big, you know, unexpected event. I really love that.
But you gotta admit, though, without the UFO in there, the initial whole sequence of events never would have happened in the second episode, in the second season of Fargo.
Well, it's true. And what I like about it is it seems like it's in the second season of Fargo, it seems like it's almost like this subtle outside influencer who just gives nudges to it.
Yes.
You know?
And there's the movie too, what's it called?
Magnolia.
Magnolia?
You were going to say Magnolia?
That's what almost came out. Yeah, that has the fish fall at the end. And that fish fall, you know, the character's just kind of going, well, this is just one of those things that happens.
Was it a fish fall or a frog fall?
Frog fall, you're right. Yeah. It was a frog fall. I was thinking frogs, but said fish.
Yeah, I do that a lot. Yeah.
I've also really been enjoying this show called Dead of Summer.
Never heard of it.
No one's ever heard of it because it's on a network called Freeform that used to be something else. I just happened to see an ad for it. It kind of gives you the feeling like it's going to be like an 80s slasher type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But instead it involves like Lovecraftian gods and this ancient cult and all this other stuff. And I'm like, oh, this is actually cool.
This was made for me. Awesome.
Exactly. So go on.
Oh, no, I didn't know that you weren't done with what you were going to say. So.
Yeah. Well, that I think is excellent. There's one coming up. I don't know let's see what it's on. It's on USA called Falling Water. That is, it says, three unrelated people slowly realize they're dreaming separate parts of a single common dream.
Oh, wow.
And they showed some of the imagery from it. I'm like, all right, this looks like it has promise.
Interesting. Hmm. You know what I haven't been able to engage with fully is American Horror Story.
Yeah, it's because it's not very good.
Well, I watched, being a New Orleansophile, I watched the Coven season. And I thought it was good, but it just doesn't really resonate with me in any sort of meaningful way. It's almost like they throw so much stuff at each season. Like it just doesn't, in the opposite way that Stranger Things worked by throwing a bunch of different sort of, you know, alien intelligences, altered states of consciousness, psi phenomena, all at one thing, and it worked. American Horror Story tends to do the sort of similar thing, and it just doesn't. You know, you'll have an episode with, like, you know, yeah, Nazi alien space sex experiments, and it's like, no, this doesn't doesn't make any sense to me.
And the last season with the hotel, I thought, and I'm not a Lady Gaga fan, and I was kind of cringing that she was going to be in it, but I thought she did an excellent job. I thought the actors all did excellent jobs, but I thought the story was crap.
Mm.
It's like it was performed great. The way it was shot was fantastic, but the story just wasn't there.
Hmm.
I've also been absolutely loving Mr. Robot.
Hmm.
Haven't seen it.
I've heard good things about it. Yeah.
Yeah. This is the second season. It's on USA. It's about a group of hackers who take down the whole financial network.
Hmm.
But it really messes with your head. In fact, the episode that was just on, I'm not going to spoil it for anyone, but it completely changed the perspective of the entire season.
Is that a Hulu thing, or is it Amazon Prime, or?
It's probably on one of those. I mean, it's on USA. So.
Oh, okay. So it's USA. Got it.
But it's incredibly creative. There was an episode recently, for instance, the way they treat it, there was an episode recently where he was getting beaten up. And so he retreats inside his head. And the first half of the episode looks like a 90s sitcom that would have been on USA. Right down to the fact that they take old 90s commercials and run them.
Wow. Nice.
Interesting.
And even a guest appearance from Alf.
Oh, man, Alf. I used to love me some Alf.
Which was the weirdest thing, and the fact that they made it work, you know, like, because it's a dark series and here's Alf in it, but yet at the same time you're going, nope, this makes perfect sense.
Did it sound like Alf, or was it one of those, like, you know, the Muppets don't sound like the Muppets anymore, was it?
No, it sounded exactly like him. I enjoyed Preacher. Neither of you watched that one?
I have not gotten into Preacher yet, no.
My only issue with Preacher is it's very, you know, like heaven and hell and so on and so forth. And I'm just kind of like, okay, this is like, it's too simple. But the actual story and acting is top notch. I mean, it's actually a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, I saw some snippets from the beginning, and I think it's something I'd like to get into. I have not read the graphic novel series. Have you, Miguel? I feel like, being a sort of a comics aficionado, you might have.
No, I don't think I have.
I've been told that the comic actually picks up right where season one ends.
Oh, okay.
So, like, the comic is actually where season two is going, but they felt like they needed to put a backstory on it before just going. That's what I've been told, anyway. I've never read it. The other one I like a lot, and it's called Dark Matter. And this is on Sci-Fi Channel. And one of the interesting things I really like about Dark Matter is it's these people who wake up on a spaceship and they have no memory of who they are. And as the plot progresses, you find out that these are the nastiest, most vicious criminals in the galaxy. But they're not like that now because they don't have their memories.
Hmm. Kind of reminds me of Dark City by Alex Proyas.
Of what?
The movie Dark City by Alex Proyas.
Oh, Dark City. Yes.
Great film. Great film. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure.
But this this plays around a lot with the concept of who we are, because, you know, you're getting, at one point they pick up some of their old memories and they kind of revert back to their old personalities and they're kind of like, this isn't who you are. And the girl's like, yes, it is. What do you mean this isn't who I am? And it's like, how much do our memories really make us who we are?
Yeah, good points.
Our memories, our experiences, you know, and so when they're switching back and forth like that, you're seeing the same person, but with totally different memories and how different they are.
Are either of y'all Black Mirror fans?
I have it. I haven't watched it yet.
I am woefully behind on much of my Black Mirror, but the ones that I've seen are pretty damn fantastic.
I've heard the first few episodes are awesome, and then the rest are okay.
The original series is the original run is the original BBC run is all that I've seen so far. The title, you know, is a reference to, you know, our current technology, which when it's, you know, if you look at it with the screen off, it's a Black Mirror. And they're all very dystopian, sci-fi, little vignettes, and they're super, super. The ones that I've seen have been really, really compelling and really quite disconcerting in those sort of best of Twilight Zone sort of ways.
Mm-hmm. That's what I've heard. I heard, like I said, that as it goes on, it kind of loses a little bit.
What I've heard is that the consistency gets worse. So in other words, while the first season has like some really great standouts. As you go along, there are some standouts, but they just get further and farther between.
I see. I totally plan on watching it. This is a bunch of stuff I plan on watching. We'll see when that actually happens.
Yeah, story of our lives.
But again, it's because there's so much good stuff out there, but I don't want to just sit and watch movies and TV all the time. I don't have time to do it, even if I wanted to.
Yeah, totally. That's...
It's kind of like, ooh, I want to watch this. Ooh, I want to watch that. Well, eventually.
Yeah, they need to invent an app in which you can watch series while you sleep.
But no, that's when the dreams get to entertain me.
Well, the moment they can run commercials during your dreams.
Yeah, that's coming, yeah, I'm sure.
Said it'll happen. It'll happen. Yeah.
There's actually a metal band called Voivod, and back in the 80s, they wrote a concept album called Dimension Hatros, where this scientist goes to another dimension, and he finds that pretty much everyone is just mindless zombies inundated constantly by advertising and news from the government. Like, messages are repeated continually while they sleep. It's all in their dreams and everything else.
Yeah, that's what's happening.
Totally could happen.
Yeah.
Ah, actually, another good show I've been watching is called Zoo.
No, I have heard of this, but I can't remember what it's about.
It's about animals developing a mutation that causes them to turn on man.
Mm.
And I wasn't really sure at first, but the more I watched it, the more I'm like, yeah, this is at very least entertaining, possibly good.
Interesting. You know, if we're willing to branch out to non sort of 14 series, sure. that I really want to throw my weight behind. Series that just wrapped up its last season, which I'm working my way through. Hell on Wheels, which is it starts off as the story of the town that followed the railroad as it made its way ahead. Ah. That's where the town was called Hell on Wheels. But it's a really great Western that's on AMC that I don't feel like gets nearly enough love
I've never even heard of it.
It is great. I love it. It's what my wife and I are working through right now. Well, eventually when we can have all our life moved into a new house.
All right then. Well, I guess we should call this to a close. And I thank you guys. We'll hopefully do this again sooner rather than later.
A distinct pleasure, my friend.
Yeah.
All right.
Good to be back, guys.